This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. What can you do if your garden yielded a bumper crop this season and you have more fruits and vegetables than you can eat while they're still fresh? Well, it's a good time to look at ways you can preserve that produce for use all winter long, from cold storage to canning to freezing. And it's a good time to start planning ahead by saving, swapping, or buying seeds for growing next spring. Joining us to discuss preserving foods and storing seeds, and to answer your gardening questions, are Thistlehair Farm owner and organizer of the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, Vicki Tews, owner of In the Field, Kristen St. Clair, and co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Peter, Kristen, and Vicki, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Good to see everybody. So, Peter, what are the benefits of preserving food ahead of time? I mean, this used to be something where people knew the skills. They passed them down generation to generation. I think we've kind of lost that. So what do you see as being the benefits of having this knowledge?
Well, a lot of people are interested in probiotics now. And so, you know, doing your own sauerkraut, kimchi, and these preserved vegetables is a really good way to extend the storage life of a crop, but also to increase its health. The healthy benefits of it. And a lot of these processes are very simple and can be done, and you don't have to buy a large 50-gallon crock and let your cabbage sit in the basement for 6 months. I mean, you can do these using quart jars. You can do these quick 3-day kind of fermentations and transfer to the refrigerator for extended storage.
So what are the easiest crops to store, Kristen?
Well, coming out of the garden right now, I still have some tomatoes coming out, and green tomatoes and tomatillos and peppers. And I believe all these things are really easy to preserve in multiple different ways. You can dehydrate them or can them. You could freeze them, or also quick refrigerated pickles type of thing that you can put away in your fridge, and you don't have to worry about cross-contamination as much, and the various other sort of fears with canning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are other crops that you can also store away at this time of year, and those would be like your winter squashes and your potatoes and onions. They all can be stored in more or less a dry, cool storage area.
So they're pretty easy things to store then, Vicki.
Correct.
But what about temperature and humidity? What kind of temperatures do you have to keep things at?
You do want to keep them in a cool, dark area. Potatoes and onions should not be used in the same location, though, because onions produce a gas that will cause the potatoes to go ahead and start chitting out or growing shoots. So those are, you know, two items that you do want to store separately. But in winter squash, awesome. I hate to admit, but I still have some from last year that we didn't eat that seemed to be solid, but I think they're going to go to the chickens.
How long does something like that store? How long does it usually keep?
The squash?
Yeah, the squash or any of the easy.
It really depends on size. Like your delicatas are a smaller rectangular squash, and they tend to go sooner than one of your big ones like your Jardels or your, trying to think of another good one, your
butternut?
Butternuts are a good storage one also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And some varieties do store better. Some of the heirloom kind of squashes, like some of like Hunters and some of these, like the French pumpkins and things like that, mm-hmm. they don't seem to quite have as long of a shelf life. But I've kind of noticed like with butternut, you know, or acorn, something with a harder skin on it has a tendency to store a little bit longer. One thing is to remember is keep them out of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in a cool, dry place.
And the cool, dry place, so yeah. It's important to control the humidity level.
Well, like basement, yeah.
You know, potatoes left in the kitchen start growing those buds and they get mushy. So how do you keep the potatoes from getting that way?
They really need to be stored in an open, like, crate or basket type thing where the airflow is around them. And they also need to be in a dark, cool area around 40 to 50 degrees at the most, and just kept out of sunlight.
You know, folks used to use root cellars. What do they use today?
I think Kristen is grinning there.
I would love a root cellar. I would still use it. Basements are really great in a lot of cases because they do stay cool, and often there's not as much sunlight. And airflow is key to preserving fruits and vegetables for a longer period. Oftentimes, we want to close them up in those plastic bags, which creates a lot of moisture, and then they end up molding. So keeping that airflow is really important. So I, for one, use my basement.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have a dehydrator, dehumidifier in your basement, that can be helpful also. And it's just for general health of the house anyway. It's if you have a damp basement, it's not a bad idea to do that.
Mm-hmm. Can you use a garage or a shed? Is that or do you just have to be really careful about the conditions?
For sure, yeah. You can use any structure as long as the conditions are right with humidity and also light.
And temperature. You don't want it to go below freezing.
Yeah, and that's one thing about your garden shed or something. If it goes, you know, it drops down below freezing, you want to make sure, you know, some people, they will use old wooden crates and they'll pack the potatoes or onions in straw and then put them out. But but I think a basement, if you have that option, is better than in a tool shed, for instance.
Now, we're talking about the easiest crops to store. Are onions and garlic, are those on that easy list too?
I believe so, yeah. They tend to last a long time. I have garlic from last year, actually, that I've hung, and it's just ready for me whenever I want in the kitchen. So there are certain types of produce that can really...
I just find that in an air-conditioned atmosphere, your garlic will go faster. It does need more humidity than the average type of storage, so...
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Anything else on the easy side?
Well, one thing that kind of crosses over between storing your food and then also seed saving is garlic. Because if you harvest your garlic and you dry it and then you trim it and you store it in the fall, you can then use that same garlic. You plant one clove, will grow one bulb of garlic, and then you can plant that out. And seed garlic is expensive, and it's also a fairly easy crop to save and to propagate.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk with Missy Jo in Ross. Hi.
Hi there. Last year I grew some Brussels sprouts, which were excellent. And then this year I've just left them in the garden and let them go to seed, and I have retrieve those. So I want to know, when should I plant my new seeds? How many? Because it did give me quite an abundance of seeds of the Brussels sprouts.
On the seeds for the Brussels sprouts, you do want to store them for a couple of months. But before you do that, be sure that they are totally dry. I would leave them on like a paper plate for a week and let them dry out totally before you would pack them away in like a mason jar. You would want to start those in early spring. They are cool weather crops, so you want to get them going early. And they do best when they are started on like a heat mat or some area that is warm. It takes a little more to get those germinating. So that would be your best bet.
Awesome. And my other question on the Brussels sprout itself, it did produce some Brussels sprouts. They're not as tightly compact, each bud. Are we still able to eat them?
Absolutely. Even the foliage is edible. And most people don't realize that the foliage from that or broccoli or Brussels sprouts or cabbage, the outer leaves are actually edible too. Good for roll-ups, like to stuff with rice.
You know, another thing to think about, like for the home gardener and community gardener on a small scale, is that, you know, letting the seeds from one, like pepper or one Brussels sprouts bush will give you many more seeds than you need. So after you save them, I really highly recommend sharing them with friends and fellow gardeners. And Vicki, you have the seed swap coming up.
We do. We have started last year the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, and it is always going to be held on the second Saturday in April, which next year is April 8th. And we'll have more information on that on the Facebook page under that name, the Ohio Valley Seed Swap. But in the meantime, we encourage you to let something go to seed bring it in and be willing to share it. If you have nothing to share at the first swap, feel free to come. We have plenty to give out and share with you. The purpose of this is to encourage people to try new things and to grow something in their garden that would be maybe even a little different than what you're used to. Try something new. But we want everyone to grow at least a container of something, if not a nice little garden plot in their own property.
So people actually could, you actually swap seeds. If I had Brussels sprouts, I could come in and swap it for something else. That's how this
Correct.
Works?
Yes. And okay. Yeah. So we'll have a nice selection. I specialize in more or less tomatoes. We grew 212 varieties this year. I've saved seeds from most all of them, and we'll be having those to share, along with a lot of donated seeds from seed companies. And also, we will be having Ben Cohen from, it's called Gardens Across America Project. He is one of our guest speakers coming up this year, and he will be bringing in some rare seeds to share with people.
Vicki, are there certain plants that do better as far as saving the seeds and then replanting them? Are there certain things that will grow better than other things?
I think, you know, most of these varieties that I've been trying lately are some new to me, and a lot of them are going to fail because of our environment, our climate. But I think that what you need to do is try, and then you will find from trying certain varieties that will thrive for you, and then they get adapted to our area. And then that way, when you share, they're more successful with other people to use.
Yeah, and I think that adaptation, I think, is a really something to think about. You know, when you talk about like a heirloom tomato from, you know, some northern Kentucky, you know, we can bring it up here and we're pretty much in the same zone and they, you know, can do pretty well. But if you grow that tomato and save the seed year after year, it becomes more naturalized to this area and you're picking the best, your best piece of fruit is what you want to save the seeds from. And so you're, you know, improving genetics. And my wife, Vicki, at Home Meadows Long Farm, she does a lot with Hopi blue corn. And so we have seed that she's been planting and we've been saving for 5-6 years now. And so it's become naturalized to this area.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. Call us with your questions about preserving foods, storing seeds, or any gardening question that's on your mind. And you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us to discuss preserving foods and storing seeds are Thistlehair farm owner and organizer of the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, Vicki Tews, owner of In the Field, Kristen St. Clair, and co-owner of Home Meadows Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. Call us with your gardening questions, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Vicki, as we're talking about seed collecting and saving, the first thing I guess you got to do is you got to gather the seeds. So when should you do this? What's an ideal time of year to start doing this?
It all depends on the crop. Tomatoes, of course, are going to be midsummer when they're ripe, August through a good frost, most tomatoes. And other items, like your lettuce, which are spring type of a crop, when midsummer comes, I'll leave a few of them go that will go to seed, and then I can collect the seed before I pull the plant. So it all depends on what it is.
Okay, and once you've got it gathered, how do you store it? Is it kind of the same thing? It just depends on what it is?
It does depend on what it is. Usually the beans that we have been saving will be dried totally before we put them in the freezer. That's where we keep those. Others just require into a container, like a jar, and be stored away in a nice, cool, dark place.
Now, I've heard that you should freeze grass seed before you plant it. Is that true?
I'm not a grass grower.
Okay. So I was just curious about that.
Well, there is a technique of sowing grass seed where you put it out in the ground in February, right before snow.
Right.
And so that might go with what you're talking about if you're doing a later spring. I've never heard that, so I don't want to recommend anybody to
yeah,
do it.
So there
but
is
February sowing is and March sowing, is it's not unusual to see people do that.
Yeah, one of the things, I guess, in relation to that is stratification, like pawpaws. We collected pawpaws this year. We're saving the seeds, but they have to go through a cold stage before they would be planted to germinate. And that requires us putting them in the refrigerator for 3 months, just like you would a daffodil bulb. It would go through a cold spell, or garlic, before it will germinate and grow. So there's a few other little techniques like that that you'll have to know. And that's where these books, a few good books come in. One of them is Seed to Seed by Susan Ashworth. Another one is one of Bill Best's books from down in Berea. And it's called Seed Saving, Preserving Taste. And Bill was really a pioneer in this business. He was a professor at Berea College, went home on weekends to Appalachian area where he was raised, and started gathering beans and tomatoes and the stories behind them from these families who had raised, you know, saved them for generations back in the hollers of the hill. So those are both two really good books to get some information on seed saving.
So how long will they keep once you've got them saved?
It varies. Lettuce, things like your lettuce and your spinach seeds, they don't have as long a shelf life. Each year they'll start losing some. But tomatoes, I know, have gone for long periods of time, things like that. So each crop depends on its storage length years. Beans are pretty long time as long as you keep them in the freezer.
Yeah, and I have if you wanted to contact me through turnerfarm.org, I have a little spreadsheet that I can, PDF file I can send people, and that it has a little chart that's been culminated from a couple extension universities that kind of give you like beans, lettuce, cabbage, so forth, you know, the average shelf life of those. It does vary. And I think it's good to keep that in mind. I think another thing, too, is that, Vicki, at the seed saving swap, there'll probably be some garden, some seed collecting education going on
Definitely.
Terms of programs, so people can get more information.
Right, we're working on it. We're working on several different workshops during the swap that you'll be able to attend.
Is this really satisfying to learn, Vicki? I mean, once you get the hang of this and you're successful with it, do you get a good feeling from this?
Oh, it is. It's great. I think it's even more so. The fact that we're preserving history, we're preserving these crops that could be lost if we don't make an effort to grow them out and save the seed. So, I mean, if you look at the grocery stores, apples, for an example, there's about an average of 7 varieties that are always available at a grocery store. And the best way to really experience some of these other varieties is go to the orchard, go directly to the farms, and start learning about all the other availabilities that are out there that we all are really not privy to in a grocery store. I mean, they're shipped there for the crops they have there are shipped in, and they are produced for storage, you know, shelf life, easily. Not bruised, things like that. Those are the things that are going to be available in the grocery. The huge array of food that's out there that we could grow ourselves and then trade the seeds is just astronomical.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's speak with Larry in White Oak. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you for covering this topic. It seems like all the other programming today is about the political situation and the unseemly topics that come with the election, so it's nice to hear.
It's a nice break, isn't it?
It's actually family-friendly for a change, you know. But the comment I have for your guest is that a lot of people don't realize the difference between fruits and vegetables from the point of view that when you pick a fruit or eat a fruit, you're not actually killing the plant, but just the offspring of the plant. But when you eat a vegetable or, you know, dice up or devour your vegetables, you're actually killing the plant. And I just wanted to say that plant lives matter, thank you for taking my call.
It's an interesting perspective. You know, but it's interesting that he brings that up. At the community gardens that the Turner Farm Community Garden Program does, we do a combination of perennial, sometimes we call it edible landscaping, along with our gardens. And I think that it is interesting. I mean, when you eat a carrot, that's the end of the line for that one particular carrot. But so maybe it even's a little bit more jokingly, I'll say, like, you know, help save us those carrots' offsprings by at least letting one go to seed and collecting the seed and regrowing it.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective, though. You're like you were saying, you're, in some respects, you're preserving a piece of history.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's truly, we talk about, organic agriculture and biodynamic agriculture. And one of the things that you hear, a term you're hearing more and more, is regenerative. And so I think by having some perennial food-bearing plants, it does that. But also by saving seeds, it's regenerative. And it's the same way that all your plant material that's wasted at the end of the season, meaning whether it be spoiled fruits or the leaves, clippings from trimming plants and the plants themselves at the end of the season, by composting them and creating a living soil to be reused in the garden. That's all
part of
the process.
So you're talking about sustainability.
Yeah, but I'm becoming more and more interested in the term biological and regenerative, really, than sustainability. Sustainability, it just means you're sustaining. We want to go beyond sustainability to regenerative.
I like saving seeds to eat them as well. I think there's a lot of seeds that are very tasty, like coriander that comes off of the cilantro plant. So letting the seeds develop, not only can you save them to replant them, but they're delicious to eat as a spice for the rest of the year. Also, dill is really delicious. Fennel produces a massive amount of seeds. And all these are so good for your digestive system as well. So there's just so many benefits of exploring, letting a plant live longer and seeing what it can produce.
Correct. I agree.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Sonia in Lebanon. Good afternoon, Sonia.
Good afternoon. I had a question and a comment. First of all, I love this topic. I'm a canning instructor in Lebanon, and we own a shop where we sell our canners, their equipment. So thrilled to hear this today. One of the best things I've heard so far is the discussion about how the produce that comes to our market is not exactly the produce that we grow in our backyard. On the market, what you see at Kroger is grown for shipability, for marketing purposes, so it's the beautiful colors on the table. But yet, some of the best strawberries I've ever used were raisin strawberries that were sort of soft and ripe-like. But you'll never see those in the grocery store. They're not the right color. One of the questions I had was, I'm hearing a wonderful debate about seeds, and I have comments on how the hybrid seeds of tomatoes have kind of changed the way we're dealing with canning these days, because I do tell my students that if they're using hybrid seeds or purchasing hybrid plants, that possibly the acid level is lower in these tomatoes, and therefore they need to be using up-to-date temperatures, time and temperatures, for canning tomatoes into salsas or paste or whatever else they would like to make.
Sonia, before you answer the question, I had a question for you. My grandmother canned all the time. She had a garden, so she always had more than she could eat. She canned a lot of things. It seems like that's fallen by the wayside. Are you seeing a renewed interest in canning and preserving food?
Well, I've been teaching it for 21 years, and we rarely have an empty class. We get people coming from Canada. Had a lady one time from South Africa come. It's hard to find the classes, so I'm assuming that the interest must be there, because people will do anything they can to get into a class these days. But we're scheduling more and more classes, so maybe that says something.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear there's a lot of interest in it. So
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that people have retained interest in canning. It's certainly one of the best forms of preservation we have. And that's so wonderful that you're teaching that to people. I do think it's very interesting looking at how produce has changed and how we're developing it now, how that affects canning. And it certainly does. Some recipes definitely need to be modified. So it's interesting comparing the older canning recipes to newer books on canning. And there's a lot of great books. I always recommend that people follow recipes for canning a couple times before they ever choose to explore and getting creative with a recipe, adding new things to it, because there is quite a balance that you need to retain on your acid level, salt and sugar, all the preservatives to make that can safe.
Kristen, what is canning? Explain that.
So canning is the process of taking fruits or vegetables, different products, placing them in a jar and sealing that jar.
I remember bell jars is what my grandmother always used.
Yeah. And they're still very popular today. There's lots of different ways to do this. Two main methods, one for canning in a water bath and the other with a pressure cooker. The main difference is foods that are high in acid, you want to can in a water bath because they're going to retain their quality and remain safe. The water bath, of course, only reaches 212 degrees, which is the point that water boils. When you cook something in a pressure cooker, you can reach a much higher temperature. Therefore, foods that are more alkaline or not as acidic, that's the best method for those foods. They tend to be a little bit more dangerous unless all that bacteria is killed off by that high temperature. So those are the two main methods. I do believe that canning for a beginner preserver, canning, it can be quite a leap for some people. And there's lots of more, I think, easier methods for smaller batches of things, such as refrigeration we take for granted. I think there's a lot of cool stuff you could put in the refrigerator and store away, such as a shrub, which is a drink mixer that you can make with fruit and vinegar and sugar, throw in the refrigerator, and you could save for a long time and enjoy that, making different sodas or cocktails with it, a quick pickle. And freezing is a great resource as well. I lean very heavily on freezing foods.
So how should someone new start? I mean, what do they need to do this?
Canning specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Well, canning, you would need to buy different supplies.
Yeah, those are your jars, of course.
Mm-hmm, yep. Your jars, and you want a big pot. Also, a metal grate to throw on the bottom of the pot that keeps the jars from touching the bottom of the pot. That helps promote the circulation of the water. This is, of course, with the water bath canning method. And you'd also need probably a funnel and the tops of the jars. Then you're going to make your product, and you have to follow specific steps of getting everything sanitized, which is not hard. It just involves more steps. There's a lot of great recipe books and really fun stuff you can put in jars, store away. It's gorgeous. It's a great gift. And it helps, I think, build a lot of pride in what you're doing, which is my main agenda as far as cooking with people is creating more pride and independence. So if we can make stuff that is original and tasty and good for you, and you can store that and give that away, that's a glorious day.
Is the main risk, Kristen, though, you're talking about making sure things are sanitized. So the main thing you have to be careful about is making sure you don't get any bacteria into your canning.
Yeah, definitely. So the heat helps with that. The acid, sugar, and salt all help with that. So it's a balancing act of making sure the good bacteria can remain in some cases, and everything, the bad enzymes, bad bacteria are killed off through that process. And you're left with food that is capable of sitting on a shelf for a long time.
How long will it keep, usually?
They recommend, a lot of people recommend to eat it within a year, a canning, but it's safe to eat for multiple years out. The food may change slightly in color, but you can leave it on the shelf for a long time.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Rick in Highland County. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a large garden in rural Highland County, and I enjoy growing new varieties
not necessarily heirlooms, most of which have hybrid vigor, and they're also patented and trademarked varieties. So I know I can't sell the seeds or exchange them, but there's nothing to keep me with growing the next generation. And for my own interest, seeing how close that second generation is to what I grew the previous year. And it's when I find that after three, four generations, what I come up with is probably an heirloom or something just as good as what was originally purchased. So I will take your comment off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
And that's very true. In order to get it stabilized, you do need to grow it out for several years. Someone who's doing something special like that in the Cincinnati area is Andy Bittner, who is working with developing new varieties of tomatoes. And to get them to be true, he's 4, 5, 6 years out on some of them, some spectacular tomatoes that we'll probably see on the market before too long.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, as far as, when it comes to canning, once you've got a can, what's the best place to store your canned produce in?
It's very similar to how you would store regular produce. You want the light to be dim or not much light, and then also a cool place. I think one of the most important parts about storing food or preservation at all is being very organized on how you store it. It's very easy to make some beautiful things and put it in the back of the shelf and forget about it. So keeping a list of what you've done is helpful.
Keeping it dated so you know how long it's been there, I guess, would be important too.
Even in the freezer, keeping a little list of the things you have in there. And that way you can just check out your list instead of sorting through and numbing your fingers.
And it's, and being organized is important with seed saving as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always date and write the item and the date on there before you put it away.
Yeah, you can't stress enough labeling and dating.
That's correct.
Yeah, because a lot of things, you don't think they're going to look alike, but it's pretty amazing. You can't tell the current preserves from some applesauce that had raspberries in it, when he gets all
We will continue our gardening conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to answer your gardening questions as well as discuss preserving foods and storing seeds are Thistle Hair Farm owner and organizer of the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, Vicki Tews, owner of In the Field, Kristen St. Clair, and co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kristen, zucchini always seems to be one of those things that people always have more than enough of. So yeah. Is that something that's good to can?
Yeah, you can canned zucchini. You can pickle it. There's so many ways to process any fruit or vegetable. So it's exciting to think about all these alternatives. I think that you can also dehydrate things. I'd say what I use most at home is freezing and dehydrating. It's a quick method, especially if you don't have bulk of something. So for a lot of home gardeners, any type of produce that grows, and maybe you'll have 3 zucchini. So what do you do with 3? Maybe you don't want to eat them that day. So is there a way to process them that doesn't take all day, but you can still enjoy them later on? So dehydrating and freezing, to me, are the easiest options. You can dehydrate zucchini, and you can make little chips with it. You can dip in hummus. You can make fruit leathers with a lot of fun stuff, and you can throw in different vegetables into your fruit leather. So like a fruit roll-up, a good snack to have around. So dehydration-wise, I'd say also you could make a powder with zucchini. I like to make lots of different vegetable powders. So you would dehydrate something for long enough that it's crisp, and then you could put it in a food processor and create a powder that then you could put in different soups and sauces. And all those vegetables give you a very umami or earthy flavor that you can add. It's so easy then to just add a spoonful as you go.
So what do you need to dehydrate your produce?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you can dehydrate things in our natural sun. So hanging bundles of herbs, let's say.
Like you're talking about garlic earlier.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that just naturally will do its own thing as long as the moisture account isn't too high. So that's an easy and free way to do it. You can build a sun box and dehydrate things outside using the solar power. Or if you want, you can purchase a dehydrator. I think a dehydrator is a great investment, and you can get them at thrift stores now pretty much everywhere for whatever reason. So they're cheap, and it's a great way to see if maybe this is something you want to do in the future. The benefit of dehydrating is that you store something, you take out all the moisture, and you keep the nutritional elements involved, and it stores for an indefinite period of time. And buying a dehydrator, you can also retain the same color, which I think is one of the most important parts about preserving food, is retaining the color.
Well, I think, too, it's interesting when we think about this, too. I mean, it can be a kind of a – people traditionally learn to can or dehydrate from their parents, or else some families that had gardens together would get together and can a lot of things together and kind of do it in large batching. So it's sort of more fun. And so forth, and it was a way for people learning. Now, we've kind of losing that connection, but so I would really suggest if you know somebody who dehydrates, so you know somebody who cans, ask them if you can come and help them, because they really love to have some help. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun also.
Get you some hands-on experience in doing this.
Then that's a good way to learn. And sometimes if you can, if you know someone well enough, they might be willing to let you borrow the dehydrator and use it once and try it once. And make sure before you go in and make the investment, sometimes it's good just to give it a little test run if you can.
One way I've done it in the early years when I didn't have a dehydrator, I would take a cookie sheet and put parchment on it. And then I would lay my items, say apples, on this cookie sheet. And I actually put it in my car on the dash, rolled up the windows and after I parked it in the sun. Mm-hmm. It works, and your car smells great afterwards.
That's a great idea. It sounds like that's pretty easy to do, too.
It gets pretty warm in there. You know that. So.
Yeah, do follow. I mean, there are recipes, too. If you want to make some apple chips or dehydrated apples that you're going to eat right away, you don't necessarily need to dip them in, citric acid or lemon juice, it'll be fine. But for long-term storage, there are some little tricks and recipes that you should really look into and follow for long-term preservation. Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to talk to us. And Mary Jane Winton Place joins us now. Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi. I wanted to ask about pickling whole walnuts in the hull, which a neighbor of mine does. Do you have any tips? And I will just listen. Thanks.
Okay. Well, that's a wonderful question. I have not myself done that, so I don't know how much input I'll have, but it sounds like an amazing, fun thing to try to pickle. Vicki, do you have any thoughts?
I've never done it either. I do know somebody also who has done it in the past. Mm-hmm. And goodness knows I've got the walnuts right now in my driveway after the storm last night.
Well, that's interesting. At home, we make ink out of them, and we've made use them for natural dyeing. But I didn't even know you could pickle and eat them. So that's news to me.
Yeah. First I've heard of it, too.
Yeah. It's interesting, going back to zucchini for a minute. Yesterday, Turner Farm has a community garden in the Witten Terrace community, and one of the gardeners, Deborah, was talking about using zucchini and brownies in a brownie recipe that she had got from one of the extension agent people. So that's another thing, is like using zucchini and breads as a way, if you have a few or a lot, you can kind of do that. And then breads or brownie can be frozen too for longer term storage if you wanted.
And I've taken the zucchini and shredded it like the recipe would call for and went ahead and froze it in the amount that the recipe called for in a Ziploc.
Oh.
In a freezer bag. And then later, come winter, I can pull it out and still make the zucchini bread or cake or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's very fun to hide vegetables in sort of normal products, like throwing beets into chocolate cake and zucchini into pancakes and lots of different things, because you can freeze those products too. And it's sort of like this secret throwing a vegetable into something that's a more typical recipe. It's a great conversation starter.
And you're making me hungry, too. Sounds good.
Yeah. Well, another one of those, too, is beets and chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that combo. Yeah.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk to Mike in Westchester. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, and I, too, love this this show and hope 91.7 creates a series out of it every other week, so thank you for doing that. I'd like to talk a little bit about the feeding the monarch butterflies and the milkweed project in Cincinnati. We successfully planted seeds in the spring after refrigerating them for a month between a couple of paper towels, and that was from the seed pack from the Civic Garden Center, and we were successful. The milkweed flourished in a corner of our yard, and then the seed pods came maybe August, and there were 10 or 15 seed pods that I didn't know what to do with. So I was wondering, is there an organized milkweed seed saving project, or just let them blow in the wind and throw them in the woods to reproduce naturally? I'll listen up now.
I'm not exactly sure if there's a exact group that is into that project, but I know that the conservation districts have been offering programs on the monarch butterfly and preserving their life cycle by saving seed and planting these different crops, plant materials such as the milkweed or asclepias. So you may check with the conservation district and see what they have. Otherwise, Google is such a good source for finding different organizations out there. Yeah. I don't know if Peter might know of something.
Well, Melinda at Turner Farm, you know, they propagate and grow and sell milkweed every year, a tropical and also the native. And so if you could email Melinda at turnerfarm.org and she could probably provide you some information. And then I think it's the Hamilton County's Soil and Water Conservation District. I think they were doing some programming that revolved around this also. And we grow it at home and at some of the community gardens. I think it's a really great thing to do. And thank you for this call and bringing that up.
Let's talk to Pam in Waynesville. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Really enjoying the show. I have a question about saving flower seeds. I've been doing this for a number of years. I live on a pretty big piece of property, and I'm just too cheap to buy annuals. So every year, right about this time, actually, I go out and pop off the heads of all of my zinnias, all of my marigolds, my sunflowers. And a few years ago, a friend of mine from upstate New York sent me hollyhock heads, which actually came from her great-great-great-grandmother, which I just absolutely cherish, and they've done really well. So I'm curious if you have any recommendations for other annuals that do well when you save the seeds, that are easy enough to get the seeds, and then if those that maybe don't require the refrigeration or things of that nature. I just dry store mine and literally plant the whole head in a new spot next year, and I just have them growing everywhere now, which I just love the color. Thank you.
Flower seeds, the annual flower seeds, are relatively easy to save. You do need to wait until the plants to the seed heads are mature and to harvest and dry them. I attended a swap this past weekend in Brown County, Indiana, where they have several groups. Seed saving is my specialty, of course, is vegetables and fruits, whereas there were other groups there that specialized in the flowers or in nuts. Some were there even with rice and grains. So there's a lot of areas to go to for seed saving. But if it does well for you in your area, I would suggest you do try to save those seeds and propagate them out each year and see how they do in changing over time, because sometimes they will not stay true to themselves. So the best thing is just experimenting. And I don't know if you have any other suggestions on it, because flowers are really not my field.
No, it's not. I'm not much involved with that either. So
yeah. I know that there will be some at our swap in April 8th. that will have the flower seeds. So you may want to go on our Facebook page and like it for more information. And that is the Ohio Valley Seed Swap.
Let's talk to John in Loveland. Good afternoon, John.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My question was, how long do you need to let a pepper seed, a pepper plant mature before you can harvest it to save the seed for the next year?
So bell peppers, how long do you have to wait? How mature do they
need to
be?
On the bells?
Yeah.
Most of the bell peppers have a stage. They go from green to red or green to orange or yellow, depending on the variety that you have. You do want them to go to full maturity of color and then consider harvesting the seeds from them at that point. Green, at the green stage, most of them are not ripe. So you do want them to be fully mature before you harvest them.
Gabriel sent us an email, and he has wanted to know, can you compost tomato plants? He's heard some plants shouldn't be composted. So.
It depends on if they're diseased or not.
Yeah, and that's it. Some people, just as a precaution, don't.
Right.
They never compost their tomato plants. There's the mosaic virus, and there are some other bacterial type diseases that can be spread by doing that. I mean, theoretically, if your compost gets hot enough, it would kill that. But in most backyard composting, it's very difficult to do. So it's
not really the plant itself. It's the diseases or viruses
correct.
The plant might carry.
And right. So if you're, for a homeowner of several plants, it may be, just to play it safe. You can, you can buy the lawn bags and you put them in the lawn bags and it does go and get composted. So it's not like it's going into the landfill. So you can do that with a clear conscience. But if your plants are very healthy, same thing with peppers. I mean, I generally, in the community gardens, we will go ahead and compost them.
Let's talk to Elsa in Eastgate. Hi, Elsa.
Hi. I just wanted to, the person that just called in about the milkweed, I just wanted to comment on the fact that I did have this plant, but I ended up having to move them after the third year because I just want to make people aware of when you do plant these seeds, they are going to take over the flower bed. So you need to put it in somewhere because the roots just go wild and they pop up all over the place. Just so that people are aware of when they do plant it, it's not going to be a plant that stays in one spot.
So milkweed's pretty prolific, Peter?
Yes, well, and it'll spread through the roots, but then some varieties, the natives, though. And then also, those pods have, I don't know if there's a thousand or thousands of seeds in them, and so they drop, and they will naturally just regenerate. So you have two things going on. I mean, they're spread quite as fast as thistle, Canadian thistle or something, but then for us at home, we have a larger property, and we just kind of consider that an asset. If you want a nice little tidy little garden, they can get away from you.
And Kristen, as we close out the show, tell us about your organization. You're the owner of In the Field. What's that?
Yeah, In the Field is an educational, hands-on culinary business. So I create different curriculums and teach them throughout the city to different groups of people, various ages and backgrounds. And the whole goal of In the Field is to help communities bond, heal, and grow in confidence in cooking. So we're really looking at using food as a vehicle to help communities and what that means. So as we were talking about earlier with canning, inviting people over and enjoying what that looks like to process food together is so meaningful and something that a lot of our communities have lost now. So ways that we can interact with food in a healthy manner and cook healthful meals for our families and friends, I think is really a great turning point for moving forward in growth in our own life.
And Vicki, real quickly, what's the date for the swap?
The date will be April 8th. That's a Saturday, second Saturday in April of 2017. We are still working on location and guest speakers, so As I said before, go ahead and like the page called The Ohio Valley Seed Swap, and we will keep you up to date as to what we're doing.
Well, thanks everybody for joining me this afternoon. Thistlehair farm owner and organizer of the Ohio Valley Seed Swap, Vicki Tews, owner of In the Field, Kristen St. Clair, and co-owner of Home Meadow Song Farm and director of the Community Garden Program at Turner Farm, Peter Huttinger. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Each Friday on Cincinnati Edition, local editors and reporters join us for a look at the events and people affecting our region. This week, we'll preview the trial of Ray Tensing and the fatal shooting of Sam DuBose. The trial starts Tuesday and is sure to draw national attention. We'll also discuss the other top local stories of the week. That's our weekly news review on the next Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.